Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am so excited to be talking art with artistic director and choreographer of Dara Carr Dance, Dara Carr. Dara, welcome to Talking Art.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be with you today.
Yeah, it's so exciting to have you here, and we're so excited to have you in town. Tell me a little bit about Dara Carr Dance. What do you do? When did you start?
So we are a contemporary Irish step dance company based in New York City. We started in 1998 and have been bringing our fast-paced, high-energy celebration of Irish music, dance, and traditions to audiences across the country since then.
Oh, that's so exciting. And we're so excited to have you here right before St. Patrick's Day, the week before. So that's very exciting. And you're going to be here as part of Quad City Arts Visiting Artists series. And you're going to be going into the schools. What kind of, with your work, what are you going to be bringing to the students?
So that's right. We're looking forward to kicking off your St. Patrick's Day celebrations. Working with students in a wide range of schools throughout our residency time period. We've done arts education work for many years, and we really feel it's a strong foundational component of our work to really open up sort of the behind the scenes look at dance and music to students of all ages, primarily K through 12 students. We offer a 45-minute lecture demonstration. With demonstrations of both the hard shoe Irish step dance style, that's very much like tap dance, very rhythmic, percussive, and also the soft shoe style, much more akin to ballet, sort of light and graceful. So they'll see both of those contrasting styles. We also work with live music, as historically, the live music dance connection is a really important aspect of the tradition.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that, that you'll have those live musicians with you and incorporate it into your piece. That's going to be so exciting. And you are going to have a public concert here in the Quad Cities at the Capitol Theater in downtown Davenport on March 13th at 7 p.m. So what can audiences expect from that?
So that we talk about a ceilidh, and a ceilidh is an Irish term meaning a house party. The tradition of calling upon friends and neighbors for an evening of singing, music, dance, storytelling. And so really that show is celebrating those indigenous Irish art forms. We'll have our live musicians there, including several vocalists, fiddle, accordion, spoon player, flute player, and guitar. Really robust sound that'll lift the audience's spirits and carry our rhythmic dancing forward. You'll see lots of traditions like broom dancing and didling, making mouth music. So it'll be a really high energy, high spirited evening for the audience.
Oh my gosh, how fun. I cannot wait. We just had, I don't know if you are familiar with them, but an Irish folk band, Goitcha, here a couple of weeks ago in the Quad Cities, and it was fantastic. It was so much fun. So we are excited for you to be bringing more of that energy back. And like we said, kicking off the St. Patrick's Day season. I'm not sure if St. Patrick's Day is a season, but...
We think it is. We're trying to make it one.
So, Dara, tell me, how did you get involved with Irish dance? It's such a unique and kind of, not niche in a bad way, but niche style of dance. How did you come to that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, growing up, I grew up in an Irish-American family in Toledo, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And for myself and my three sisters, doing Irish dancing was really a means of connecting to our Irish heritage. So we took Irish dance lessons and we would dance at St. Patrick's Day events and parties and things of that nature. And then I really began to explore it more deeply on the competitive Irish dancing circuit. Irish dance is organized around a series of competitions, so at the local, regional, national, and international level. And I became very involved with that while also studying ballet growing up. And then it was interesting because, as you said, it was a really niche sort of kind of more insular art form, I think, for primarily Irish American communities in the 70s and 80s. But then the advent of river dance in 1995 really brought Irish dancing to much the attention of a really a global audience. And that show is celebrating its 30th anniversary, which is remarkable. And it's, you know, really brought Irish dance to the forefront of commercial and popular culture in many ways. And so what we try to do in my company is to kind of be a bridge between sort of the traditional aspects of the form, as well as, you know, bringing it into contemporary times, and kind of celebrating the appeal of Irish dance from both a rhythmic standpoint and the live musical aspects.
Sure. And like I said, I'm so excited that you guys have live music with you, because like you said, you know, the origin of Irish dance is that, like, we're at the pub and we've got the musicians and some people are getting up and dancing a reel or a jig and we're having a crack. And, you know, it's all of it together. It's not just dance. It's the party.
Absolutely. And I think having those two things, the marriage between the musicians and the dancers, is a really important aspect of the form. And so I think by honoring that, we always tour with live music. That's a really a special part of the program.
Yeah. And it's such a, you know, there's something I find about Irish music, especially, you know, you mentioned having the vocalist, that, you know, there's a sing-songiness of the native Gaelic that's under there, but also like there's just kind of this very ethereal kind of haunting quality to it that just sticks in you in a way that personally I don't find like American vocals do in general.
Yeah. Well, there's the tradition of keening in Ireland. So the tradition of the lament, the slower kind of singing. And we have a beautiful vocalist too. Vocalists that work together coming with us, Liz Hanley, one of our longtime collaborators, fiddler and vocalist, as well as Jefferson Hamer. So there'll be a beautiful harmonizing of their vocals together on the program. And we had it done without dance as well. So there's sort of the music and dance together, and then aspects that are strictly musical parts of the program. So you can really hone in on that art form as well.
Sure. Well, and it's interesting, you know, you mentioned river dance, of course. I think that's what, especially as American audiences, we immediately think of if we're of a certain age of seeing that. And, you know, while there is that kind of that boost of the art form from something that is so popular like that was when it first hit, like, have you found that when people are coming to see you, they are just like expecting river dance and that's going to be the show, or like, I'm sure there's a bit of a double-edged sword there.
Certainly. And I think, you know, that was probably more common back in the kind of early 2000s.
Sure.
I think when river dance was more of a brand new phenomenon, that folks would expect to see that kind of straight line of rhythmic dancers moving in unison. And while we do have several pieces in the show that are kind of a nod to that in terms of the line of dancers moving in unison, we really try to also bring forward the more traditional aspects. So at a ceilidh or a party, you'd see a lot of ceilidh dancing, which basically involves really elaborate figured patterns, spatial design patterns. If you think of Celtic artwork, for example, the knotwork that you might see in jewelry. So we use a lot of that Celtic design as a template for choreography of how to move dancers through the space.
That's so really cool.
Like an outwardly facing kind of Rockettes or river dance line of unison.
Yeah.
You have this more internal knotted kind of feeling amongst the dancers of six or eight moving in diagonals or circles or crisscrossing patterns. So in things of that nature, or for example, playing spoons, dancing with a broom, these kind of household items that are part of the tradition that we incorporate into our performance.
Yeah, that's so cool. One of my favorite things I love when going to a dance show or like a big kind of Broadway musical with heavy choreography, like I love sitting up in the balcony and being able to watch and see the choreography from above. Like I was always a big dork moment. Like I was really good at geometry in high school. And like in my work as a theater director, I use a lot of just geometry in those patterns in my directing. So I love being able to see that stuff from above and see those patterns play out. So that's the fact that you're incorporating those traditional shapes and pattern, like for me, that's really exciting.
I find it really beautiful. The movement, the locomotive movement can be quite simplistic, sort of a basic skip 2-3 through the space, mm-hmm. but the eye is drawn to the elaborate nature of the interlacing pattern.
Sure. There's something
really about it. And it's quite complex from a design standpoint. And I think the bird's eye view is interesting. It's kind of like Busby Berkeley type, you know, the old Hollywood looking from the top at the patterning.
Yeah. That happened
is quite interesting.
Yeah, there was a whole show I directed once where it was the theater had a catwalk up top, and I pretty much directed every rehearsal from up in the catwalk so I could see those patterns from up there as we were creating our movement and our blocking and choreography. So with the incorporation of the live musicians, is that something where, and maybe audiences will just have to buy a ticket and see, but is that something where the musicians are kind of maybe not like intricately involved in the choreography, but are, you know, sometimes it's like the musicians are going to sit over here in the corner and then we're going to dance over here. Or is there more interplay between the dancers and the musicians?
So that's a great question. They're on stage the entire time. Mm-hmm. And there are a few surprise moments where one of the musicians gets up and joins the dancing action, I could say.
Oh, fun.
I think three of them off the top of my head. Yeah. So there is some physical interaction between the dancers and the musicians. And they are always present on stage, either accompanying the dancing or having their own featured spotlight moments.
Sure. So tell me about, how did you start, you know, you grew up and were in this Irish dance world. Like, how did Dara Carr Dance and that company come to birth and, you know, bringing your collaborators in? Was that just a natural process through the circles you were in, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. So I grew up doing both competitive Irish dance and then as part of a pre-professional ballet company in Toledo as well. And when I went away to college, I was sort of burned out from competing. And thought sure. I was going to become, maybe a writer or a college professor or something of that nature. And when I went to Wesleyan University in Connecticut, I discovered my first modern dance class. And it was really kind of eye-opening. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. You can go to the floor and do level changes. You can use your arms and kind of move away from that vertical torso of classical ballet or Irish dance, of course, as a very rigid torso.
Right.
And so at Wesleyan, I took up a double major with dance and upon graduation, moved to New York City and thought I really wanted to pursue the dance scene in New York. And it sure. just so happened at that time was right when Riverdance was breaking. So,
got it.
The mid-90s period. And so I was able to support myself through teaching Irish dancing, which was extremely popular in that time.
Sure.
I moved out from the Irish American enclaves that I grew up in into a much broader population of interested students. And then after several years working for different modern dance pickup companies in New York, I realized that I wanted more of a conservatory style training program and to focus on choreography. So I went back to NYU, Tisch School of the Arts, to get my master's in choreography. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I really started thinking about combining what I was learning from modern dance, contemporary dance, with my Irish dance background. So those ideas of incorporating the Celtic knotwork as a spatial template for moving dancers through space. Mm-hmm. So that aspect of the patterns of Irish dance, but then as we locomote through those patterns, maybe going down to the ground and coming back up again in a modern dance style, or partnering where we lift each other and support weight from modern dance or ballet beyond sure. the Irish dance lack of our movement. In the show, you'll see both the kind of more vertical, rigid Irish dance styles, as well as the much kind of an incorporation of upper body and torso and arm movements. So I really began to fuse the two styles together. And it was at NYU where I met my first collaborators. And so I'm so fortunate that our lighting designer and technical designer, Amanda K. Ringer, is coming out with us to Davenport. She's been working with me for over 20 years. My step dance partner, Niall O'Leary, is coming out with us. We've been together for over 20 years. And so it was that really formative time when I was at NYU Tisch where I first started working with combining Irish dance and modern dance together in a contemporary context.
Well, that's what I find so fun about music and dance is that, you know, we have these forms, but just as, you know, as artists continue to grow and explore and put different combinations together that maybe you don't expect to breed these new things that nod to the old or nod to the old ways, but create something totally unique and new. It's, you know, you think about music and it's like, there's 12 notes. But the ways that artists are able to combine those different notes and put them together is always just fascinating, you know. Mm-hmm. So I applaud that.
Thank you. Absolutely. Well, I think there's always, you know, each vision is so unique, right? And I also have to highlight the dancers in my company who are also extremely collaborative and generative, right? And sort of drawing from the skills of those that I work with, whether it's the musicians or line designers or the dancers themselves. There's a lot of ways to put the puzzle together, so to speak. And we've been very fortunate, you know, being based in New York City, to really be supported in our work by a number of Irish organizations in New York. You know, whether that's the media in terms of the Irish Echo newspaper or the Irish Voice, arts programs like the Irish Arts Center, Irish Repertory Theater. You know, there's really a lot of support for what we do. We feel very fortunate to have a lot of great support from our community in New York as well.
Yeah, it really does have a great Irish scene there and lots of Irish ties. I've been to Ireland a few times, but my favorite writer has always been Samuel Beckett, so much so that I named my son after him, Beckett rather than Samuel, but still the same. But in the city and in those places like Irish Rep and the, you know, there's so many, there's just, you know, you have that population of immigrants who are there who came over from Ireland, whether that was, you know, because of the famine 100 and however many years ago now, and still today, you know, there's so many folks that come over to New York as that, you know, it's where people go to make themselves.
Mm-hmm. Like the old song, exactly.
Yeah. So with your company, like, do you have, how many dancers are in the company?
So we'll be a cast of 6 dancers will be coming out, and 4 musicians. That'll be a robust group.
Yeah. Is that typically the number you perform with, or like, do you ever do larger shows or smaller, or?
Typically 10, maybe up to 16, but yeah, typically 10 would be the touring number that we manage with. Yep.
Oh, fun. And then do you work with like a core company of dancers, or is it something that you're, you know, kind of pulling dancers in per show?
Yeah. So I definitely have a core company that we work with, but we also have, I've maintained sort of a pretty large roster of folks in the New York City area. As we were just discussing, you know, that's a great, kind of hub of Irish artistic activity. And so we do have a larger roster of dancers that we're fortunate to work with, particularly in this upcoming season of March. We call it our own version of March Madness. I bet. But we have a March Madness too. So we'll kind of send different teams of dancers out to different events, whether that's in duos or trios or quartets or smaller groupings. So we're fortunate in that we've been able to maintain and build quite a network over a long period of time of dancers in the city.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. Like, I just, you know, one of the things about, I feel, in New York is because so many people are running, if they're living, you know, whether a dancer or an actor or whatever, you know, like, you're going job to job and running all your hustles. Yeah. So it's like, you can't, it's very hard to say there are the 6 of us and we do this all the time. Cause it's like, nope, I got to go shoot this thing or perform in this thing with this group, you know, but that is part of, like, we were talking with dance style. I think one of the things that, like, it creates a lot of cross-pollination of just different, you know, people are getting, you're getting informed from so many other artists, you know, mm-hmm. that comes and affects you as an artist, that, you know, it just, because you're getting so much stimulation there of different pieces that maybe you didn't know existed before, or different styles.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in Irish dance in particular, because it has these two very contrasting forms in one genre, the hard shoe and the soft shoe. Mm-hmm. And they are both related to other genres of dance. So hard shoe and tap yep. can be very similar in some ways. And then sort of Irish dance and Scottish Highland or ballet have similarities. And so the dancers that we work with also have multiple kinds of training. So that kind of just feeds into their process of working with Irish dance vocabulary. It helps to kind of expand it and have it feel not just like a historical piece or an archive, but actually like a living tradition that's relevant in contemporary times.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's an evolving, like, you know, like language, you know, mm-hmm. I've got young kids now, and like the slang they bring home, you're like, eh, what's that word? You know, I feel a little old manny, but I try to keep up too. Yeah. So I'm sure you guys are going to be super Riz.
It's funny to say that word, Riz.
But, you know, like that's just one of the beauties of culture, is the way things evolve, you know, and we're not, and we can honor the old, but also evolve and grow and add our own chapter to the story as mm-hmm. as we grow as humans. And there's going to be someone in 30 years who was like, yeah, when I was 25, I did, you know, worked with this company, Derek Carr Dance, and I learned this stuff. And someone from wherever is going to say, oh, I worked with this company and we did this stuff, and they're going to combine those and make something new out of that. Like,
absolutely.
Evolution of art is really incredible.
Yeah, and I think it's a process that inevitably happens, as you mentioned, you know, people navigate artistic careers, which are never linear, really. It's all very curvilinear in the arts, I think. And so as people navigate their different career paths and, you know, have different collaborations and different influences and experiences, there's that kind of natural evolution of the form. And I think, too, in Irish dance, what's interesting is because it has such a competitive circuit as well, that mm-hmm. just the nature of competition also pushes that evolution kind of with a driving engine, you know,
sure.
Like, I'm going to do this kind of turn and borrow from figure skating or borrow from tap or borrow from ballet. And then the next year someone sees it and says, oh, I'm going to do that. There's that kind of nature of competition that drives the steps forward. And you'll see in the show, for example, in our hard shoe style, the hard shoes have like a kind of a hard tip on them, of course, like a tap dance shoe. There's also mm-hmm. like a flat space you can actually stand on your toe, and so you'll see our dancers walking on their points almost like they were ballet point shoes.
Oh, cool.
Which is a pretty interesting, again, kind of evolution of the traditional steps from several hundred years ago, and that's been inspired by the competitive nature of just the drive to innovate.
That's really cool, you know. And I think there's something too about, you know, and you mentioned the, you know, kind of the width you need to have as an artist to sometimes survive as an artist. You know, that with that, there is a, like, if I'm going to make a living doing this and I am looking at, like, I very narrowly do this, like, it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, like, in my story, it's like, I was going to be an actor, but to take jobs, like, I stage managed and painted sets and, you know, learned how to do voiceover and television and film acting. And, you know, it's like, what do you need? Okay, I'll do that. I'll figure out how to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's so many transferable skills that one learns from being in a creative arts practice, right? Just the idea of problem solving, or how can I look at something, I mean, and find a solution, or how can I be collaborative with somebody else? I mean, there's so many important skills that being involved with the arts brings that can be transferred to a huge range of career possibilities. And that's why, you know, going back to the start of our conversation about the arts education component of mm-hmm. our time, and to have important surrounding areas is so important, right? To bring arts into the schools, to say to the kids, okay, maybe you too will be an Irish dancer, or maybe you'll just become involved in the arts or in music or in stage management or painting sets or any nature of, you know, a range of opportunities that there's value in the arts, and that even beyond artistic careers, creativity, collaboration, problem solving, innovation, those are important in business and the marketplace. And, you know, they have lifelong applications. And so I appreciate Quad City Arts for valuing arts and education and bringing in artists to share those ideas with kids and open their possibilities of what they can do in the future.
Yeah. And we've seen so many cool stories in this visiting artist series of a kid seeing a performer and, you know, having been attracted to that medium before, but never having seen it live, you know, whether it's dance or theater or beatboxing or, you know, some other musical genre, and then seeing it live for the first time, and that being able to inspire them to say, like, hey, these are real people who are out doing this thing that I've always been interested in. I can do it too. You know, yeah. It's just so empowering for them. And we love to see that. We love those stories. It's great. We love it.
And I think, you know, particularly for kids, and now maybe I sound old woman-y, but, you know, in terms of like live performance versus TikTok or, you know, things that are edited highly on video, There's something really magical about the fact that our dancers, for example, some of them are going to be improvising. So making up these complex rhythms on the spot.
Sure.
You'll see the engagement between the live musicians and the dancers. How does that work in terms of the energy between those genres? How are they working together? What might happen, oops, in a moment, and how do you carry on? So there's some parts of live performance that you just can't replicate on like a 30-second TikTok video, I think.
No.
But I think it's important also for kids in schools to see, to appreciate and have the opportunity to see live performance and people doing these things right in front of them, really close in their auditorium or their gymnasium or wherever, and seeing that kind of magic and chemistry that happens between live artists.
Yeah. And there's so much, you know, I mean, obviously the pandemic forced us all inside, and like audiences are still coming back, you know, it's been making progress, but you know, when you have live performance and live audience there together, like there is communication between the performers and the audience, and that feeding off of each other that just doesn't happen if you're watching it on Netflix.
Absolutely. And that audience energy, you know, the dancers and musicians respond to that, right? It's uplifting. It carries performance. And we also have moments in the arts and education program that we invite audience participation. So they'll have a chance to learn a few words of Irish. Some will get on stage, learn the first step of the jig. There'll be time to ask questions. So that also makes it really interactive between the kids and the performers, which is fun.
Yeah, I used to do some touring theater when I was kind of first out of school. And I've always said, like, you will never have a more honest audience than a room full of K-3 kids. Yes. Because if they're bored, you will know. Yes. If you don't have their attention, you will know.
Yes, absolutely. They can be your best supporters and your most honest critics, for sure.
Yes.
Yep.
But yeah, when you see that room of, you know, 250 students or whatever watching, and who are just there with you, like the energy and enthusiasm they bring is, it's infectious, and it's just lovely, lovely, lovely to watch.
Yeah, we really enjoy it. It's a really important aspect of our work, the arts education component.
Yeah, well, we are so excited to have you here. Excited for the concert on the 13th. Thank you so much for being my guest today. Anything else? Any other great hints of knowledge you want to drop before we head out for the day?
Well, just thank you for having us. We're looking forward to being in residence with you. Thank you to Quad City Arts for the Visiting Artist Series. And come to the show. Come to the theater. I promise you'll have a great time. Thank you.
Well, Dara, thank you so much for being my guest today on Talking Art. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for their support and to our producer, Mark. For more information on Dara and Dara Carr Dance, you can visit www.darakardance.com. And for tickets to the March 13th performance at the Capitol Theater, visit www.axs.com. I'm Ben Gujan, and thanks for Talking Art.